Opinions expressed during the drive time with Dave Glover are those of Dave and his guests, and not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment for Dave? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now, here's Dave.
Thank you, Danielle, and welcome back to the Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. I am your host, Dave Glover. Joining me this afternoon in the studio is Linda Jansen. She is the director of Cornerstone Family Violence Center here in Cobourg. Rob Washburner and I are really looking forward to this conversation we're going to have about violence against women and how we seem to have reached a tipping point in this country where now men are in fact talking about this, and they're not talking about it as a fun and games thing, folks. They're talking about it as a serious, serious issue, especially since, you know, we look at the number of births out there and the more girls are being born than boys. So this affects your mother, your daughter, your sister, your cousin. You know what? It affects every woman in this country, and that's why we're having this conversation today. Before we get to that, here's Carly Simon. Haven't got time for the pain. I just thought it was appropriate.
All those crazy nights when I cried myself to sleep. Now melodrama never makes me weep anymore, 'cause I haven't got time for the pain. Room for the pain. I haven't the need for the pain. Not since I've known you. You showed me how to leave myself behind, how to turn down the noise in my.
Carly Simon here on your Drive Time. This is Northumberland 89.7. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Folks, sexual assault is one of the most underreported crimes in this country, with 60% still being left unreported. Why will 3 out of every 100 rapists serve time? The majority of sexual assaults are not reported to police. On average, 60% of assaults in the last 5 years went unreported. Those rapists, of course, will never spend a day in prison. But even when the crime is reported, it's unlikely to lead to an arrest and prosecution. Factoring in unreported rapes, only about 3% of rapists will ever serve a day in prison. Joining me, Linda Jansen from Cornerstone. Linda, welcome to the show. Very, very honored to have you here.
Thanks so much. I'm really pleased to be here.
And of course, for those of you that aren't aware, November is Women Abuse Awareness Month, or Family Violence Awareness Month, I guess. Unless you've been hiding under a rock lately, you're probably aware of some of the very serious allegations being made against a certain former national radio host. That certain radio host, of course, Gian Gomeshi of CBC's Q. The allegations continue to grow in terms of the number of women that he's allegedly assaulted, and there is growing concern in the media and social media about this issue. And as a matter of fact, Justin Trudeau today just kicked two members of his caucus out of the party over some bizarre allegations. Now, none of the particulars of those allegations have been made public yet, but I'm sure they will. And let's talk about it, Linda.
Sure. Where do you want to start? You want to start
well,
with...
Well, maybe we should start with, tell us a bit about Cornerstone and the services that you provide.
Okay. Well, Cornerstone is located in downtown Cobourg, but we serve all of Northumberland County. We provide emergency shelter for women and children who are fleeing domestic violence. We also provide a wide range of services within the shelter to assist them in getting reestablished into a new life, helping them connect with income maintenance, education if they need it, housing, which is the biggest issue of all for women, is housing, and a number of other, you know, risk assessment and safety planning being a really key priority in our organization. And then we also have some programming in the shelter for children. Now, for folks in the community who are not being, who are not in need of coming into shelter, we provide a range of counseling services. We have individual and group counseling services, and we have some transitional support for women who are in the community and are maybe leaving an abusive relationship, but women do not have to leave the abusive relationship to receive services through our community services. We want to work with them to help make sure they're safe and help them figure out what is the best thing for their life and their situation and get them connected to the resources in the community they need. We have some dedicated domestic violence, about 13 apartments that are available for our clients. And we also provide a group for children who've been exposed to family violence and their moms. And it's sort of a, right now we're doing it in a two-day model where they come on a PA day on a Friday and they come all day Saturday and they have meals together as a large group. And then the moms go off into a group where they learn about what their children are learning and what the impact of family violence is on their children and how to help their kids deal with the fallout from the situations. The children, meanwhile, get divided up into groups according to age and developmental stage, and there's programming that is specifically geared to that particular age and developmental stage that works through issues with them, such as because kids are frequently thinking that everything in the world is about them and it's mm-hmm. their fault.
That's right.
That it's not their fault, that it's an adult issue, how they can be keep themselves safe in situations, how to deal with conflict in a non-violent, non-aggressive way, and a large number of other issues that children experience and have to deal with when they've experienced family violence.
How many women or how many people, excuse me, how many people do you help in a year?
Well, in the shelter, we usually, it varies because of how people stay for different lengths of time, but typically between 115 and 120 women and children will go through our shelter each year. In the community services in the neighborhood of about 250 women and another maybe 50 children that we do groups in the community and the concurrent group for children exposed. We also have a primary prevention program in the elementary schools in the public and separate boards throughout Northumberland County. And in last year, we provided service to 1,175 children in their classrooms. It's for grades 5, 6, 7, and 8. each grade has a special program geared to that age and developmental stage level. And so you go in and you do the full classroom with the teacher. They take a full teaching block each week for 10 weeks. And then there's some testing that goes on before and after so that we can see what, you know, we can measure changes in attitude. We hear lots of comments from principals and teachers, and they hear comments from parents about some of the conversations mm-hmm. they're having with their children. Opens the door for those kind of conversations about, you know, bullying, racism, dating violence, cyberbullying, sexting, all of the kinds of things at different ages that children will encounter. And it arms them with skills to deal with conflict more appropriately and to actually have conversations about these things. Mm-hmm. So it's really this year we're doing the program again, and we expect to have, you know, even more kids go through the program.
You've used a lot of terminology, abuse, domestic violence, we talk about rape. Could you maybe clarify some of these things for us so that we're talking about the right things in the right way?
Okay, so family violence and domestic violence and domestic abuse are typically terms that refer to any form of abuse within a relationship or between parties that had an intimate relationship. So it might be a husband and wife, it might be common law partners, it might be a dating relationship, or those folks have separated and that those issues are coming out among them mm-hmm. and they're having these kinds of power and control situations and abuse is going on. So abuse can be physical, sexual, spiritual, financial, and emotional. There are many, many forms of abuse. It gets captured. Most folks talk about it in terms of violence, but it's the wide spectrum of violence. Mm-hmm. And what it's really about is one individual trying to meet their own needs by controlling the behavior of another individual. And when that person says, I'm not willing to be controlled in that fashion, the ante gets upped and the controlling person who has a real need to be in control mm-hmm. then escalates their behavior towards the victim and escalates into physical aggression.
So you're talking about power issues in a lot of these situations, right?
Absolutely.
Where one person has power over another. And one of the things we haven't touched on is the incest aspect of this, because a lot of victims of sexual assault and sexual violence and that type of controlling are members of your own family, an uncle, a cousin, yep. a grandfather in some cases. Is that something that we're dealing with a lot here in Northumberland County?
I think it's just as common here as anywhere else. Mm-hmm. That in the vast majority of situations in which women are sexually assaulted, that person is known to them. It's either a spouse, a partner, an ex, a member of their extended family, or a person in authority. So that could be a boss mm-hmm. or, you know, even in a volunteer situation where the other group that's really sadly, significantly at risk are those with developmental delays. And some estimates, it runs between statistically 63% of developmentally delayed individuals mm-hmm. have been abused by members of their care team, which is not like an intimate personal relationship, but it is a relationship of authority.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's concerning too.
Well, we talk about employers, and of course, Gian Gomeshi, it was a person who was in power. He was
yep.
a person who could basically get somebody fired or they would be transferred out of whatever job. There were some of the complainants, I understand, are unpaid interns who worked for the CBC. So again, these were young women who were trying to get an inroad into journalism perhaps or into mm-hmm. the CBC where they thought they might be able to have a future. And of course, that future was snuffed out like a candle by the behavior of one particularly nefarious and aggressive individual, that being Gian Gomeshi. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here when I talk about this because, you know, as you said, employers hold a lot of power, especially if you're dealing with a woman who is a single parent, for instance, who knows that if she loses her job, she may in fact lose her home or her way of life at the very least. Can we talk a little bit about that kind of power and talk about how those abuses progress?
Well, that's one of the reasons that we now have workplace legislation around harassment and abuse. And thankfully, we do have that now. But I think the difficulty is there are many people who still don't feel empowered to be able to come forward mm-hmm. because they fear the repercussions. When someone is holding that kind of power over you, you need your paycheck, and you are you know, it's often made clear to you, whether directly or indirectly, that if you report this behavior, you're going to suffer for it. You will not be believed, and you will be fired. So quite often women are backed into a corner in that respect. They also feel guilty. They feel like, mm-hmm. I must have done something wrong. I must have sent wrong signals. Where does that come from?
Mm-hmm.
That comes from the larger conversation that people have around issues of sexual assault and harassment and stalking.
Mm-hmm.
You must have done something to attract his attention. You know, you're not dressing. You dress too provocatively. Mm-hmm. Maybe you had a drink with the guy because your boss took you out for dinner and you were flattered and you mm-hmm. wanted to keep him happy so you'd keep your job and maybe get a promotion. And that guys like Gian, he has that authority. He has that ability to have pull or get you barred from his show and from a lot of places because he's so well connected.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the authority of wealth and connection and celebrity as well. And so there's no even playing field for someone who is wanting a job there, mm-hmm. wants an internship there, is really looking for help from him. It's a very big imbalance.
It would seem to me, though, you know, we often talk about these things in large urban context, big cities, mm-hmm. this is what happens. But here we are in a rural community. Does the same thing happen here? Is it the same dynamic or is it somehow different?
Oh, I think it's very, very similar. And we do see, we hear from women about experiences that they've had in their workplaces where they are sexually harassed by male supervisors or managers. Very recently in the news, it was reported that in a local pub, a fellow had planted a camera in the washroom, pointed at the toilet, mm-hmm. where all the staff changed into their uniforms and mm-hmm. went to the bathroom. And he was charged eventually with that. But those young women and older women who were working in that establishment, while he didn't actually touch them or say anything directly to them, they were recorded by him going to the bathroom and changing their clothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their body parts were exposed on camera to him, and heaven only knows where those pictures and the video of it has gone.
No, absolutely.
There's a whole nother level to sexual assault
mm-hmm.
when it's pornography, when it's videoed or pictured, and it's gotten onto the internet, and there are no boundaries there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get it off.
No, absolutely. And I know there are a number of young girls who've had that problem, and we know there were victims who ultimately committed suicide. We heard of Retea Parsons and young women like that. The other issue that I have is that, you know what, there is a guilt factor for the victim here.
Yep.
And I find that particularly heinous, because when someone steals your car or someone breaks into your house, you call the police because you've been violated.
Right.
And yet when a young woman has been violated, for whatever reason, there's that personal guilt. Now, I don't feel any personal liability when somebody breaks into my house or steals my car. And I can only guess, as a woman, I wouldn't feel any kind of unwillingness to complain if this was happening to me. But again, it's easy for me to say that. I'm a man. I have different equipment, and therefore I don't understand perhaps why there is that guilt factor. Can we talk a little bit about some of that?
Sure. I think often when women are either sexually assaulted or physically assaulted in a relationship or outside of a relationship, they carry with them certain vulnerabilities. They have, as a society, we have always taught our girls to not wear your skirts too short. Don't mm-hmm. wear your blouse too low because you're dressing like a slut or a whore or whatever, and you're going to attract attention of an unwanted nature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that puts a message in a girl's head growing up that she's going to be responsible for keeping herself safe. And we all are to a certain extent,
mm-hmm.
obviously. But the problem is that she can't control other people. And so tell me why 88-year-old women in their little fluffy jammies get raped in their bedrooms. It's not about what she wears, but those messages have always mm-hmm. been given.
And young girls, I mean, let's face it, kids are sexualized now from a very early age. I mean, just watch television for 5 minutes and you'll see an ad that is, I mean, let's face it, sex sells. I mean, I've seen gum commercials recently that I have no idea what's going on, and then the gum will flash up at the end. And they're very stylized, highly sexualized, and our kids are watching these.
Yes, and the other piece that goes with that in terms of media, like television and advertising and so on, is violence. A lot of people would say, oh, I don't believe in violence against women.
Mm-hmm.
Sexual assault, bad, you know, all that kind of thing. But then how many of them play video games? And what kind of video games are they playing? What's their favorite kind of movies? What are the most popular movies out there? They're violent movies, and quite often there's sexuality embedded in those movies as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was, heaven forbid, but when I was a kid, you know, in the movies or on TV, they couldn't have a couple in a bed. One foot had to be on the floor kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, now it's, I mean, daytime television, they're like,
well, it's like soft porn for crying out loud. But daytime television is essentially soft pornography. I mean, other than the less nudity. I mean, obviously there's no nudity on daytime television, not as much as would lead one to think that it was somewhat overtly sexual. But by the same token, women are walking around scantily clad. And
But what do we do? I mean, this is a tsunami of popular culture.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, what do we do so that we can start to counteract some of these kinds of things? Or is it just too much? Is it something that we've got to put up with?
Well, I think there are a lot of different approaches that can be directed towards it, Rob. For one thing, and this is why we're doing a violence prevention program with children in the elementary schools. And I wish that I had the funding and a program to bring it to kids at the level of kindergarten even, because I think right from the get-go, parents and schools and groups that children are involved with need to be helping kids to be aware of those behaviors and those things that they're seeing, you know, have some restriction. I mean, my goodness, you know, little children are watching things that would curl my hair as an adult, and I don't think I'm particularly naive. And I think as a parent, you have a responsibility when the kids are young enough to limit the scope of what they're exposed to. The other bit of it is as they get older, when they're being exposed in places you don't have any control over, those are times and opportunities to have conversations with your children to explore what they're seeing, how it's affecting them, what they think about it, you know? And a lot of people say, well, TV and video games, everyone knows they're just TV and video games. But it just reduces sensitivity to it. And it just makes it such a normal thing that when you see it going on around you in real life, there's hardly a reaction to it at all. So I think those are key places.
Well, there's other access, too. I mean, young kids, and I know this from speaking to my brother and sister-in-law about their young kids. I mean, they've been exposed to pornography at a very early age, as young as 9, 10, 11 years old. I mean, yeah, you can control what your kids are watching at home. But, you know, their friends have smartphones, and anyone can access anything on a smartphone. I mean, most people, I read a study recently that said 87% of the parental chips, the violence chips that are available, so you can block access. The vast majority of people have never engaged those chips, have never thought about blocking access for their kids. So your kids are now being exposed overtly online to extreme sexual behavior. And that, of course, is going to lead to more acquaintance rape, you know, as we refer to it here. Just some quick statistics, folks. How common is acquaintance rape? Well, 40% of women in Canada have been sexually assaulted. 31% of sexual assaults take place in dating and acquaintance relationships. 20 to 25% of college-age women will be victims of sexual assault at some point during their college years. Approximately 1 in 3 sexually active adolescent girls reported experiencing physical or sexual violence from dating partners. And in 2003, 9% of all students in grade 9 through grade 12 reported having been raped at some time in their lives. And I'm sure that those numbers are considerably higher than that.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it's those numbers are taken from compilations of statistics across the country, but we certainly have that going on right here as part of our local scene.
Now, when we were talking earlier about women and responsibilities and who's responsible for what part of the conversation, what's the role of men in this conversation? What should we be coming to the table with and talking about?
Well, It's interesting, and it's a very respectful question to ask about what is the role of men, because historically women's groups have really claimed the issue for themselves and the solution to the issue for themselves. But I think we increasingly recognize that this problem doesn't happen because of women. It happens because of power and control, for the most part, power and control relationships. And it is primarily perpetrated by men. And the 90-some percent, 95 to 96% of domestic homicides are men killing women and children, and also other men who might be around the woman, a new partner or a father or whatever. So you can't solve a problem without everybody working together on it. Mm-hmm. And I think the conversations that are starting now need to keep going. I think men have to, as well as women, have to increase their awareness of what the issues are and how we inadvertently feed into those stereotypes and those belief systems, because we do. And even mothers, I mean, we have to look at how are we raising our girls and boys? Because if we're perpetuating, you know, gender stereotypes with our children, then we're also feeding that men are better, men deserve more. You know, that's the whole social structure. Men have historically always been in control of property, laws, systems, large institutions. It's changing now, but it still has a long way to go. And, you know, the institutions I'm talking about might be things like business, big corporations, schools, universities, churches, temples, various faith religions, and the sort of ideology that the man's the head of the house and the woman bends to his will and makes him happy. And if we're not careful, we raise our daughters the same way. Often, and our sons.
Oftentimes, though, Dave, I don't know about you, but it gets, when men talk about these things, it gets framed in a political correctness, and that it's a sign of men's weakness that we start to share power relationships, or that these kinds of things go on. And what's been your experience when you've talked to other men about these kinds of issues? Is it really about strength, or is it about something different?
No, it tends to be about control, definitely. I mean, most of the men that I know, if they have committed any of these offenses, I have no idea. Obviously, they're not talking about that. But they do tend to talk about, well, you know, the girl's dressed, as you said, dressed a little slutty, or, you know, this or that. And, you know, the one thing that comes up when they talk about certain issues is, you know, whether she was asking for it and all of this other stuff. And like I said before, most of the men that I talk to, I just tell them straight up, hey, man, nobody asks. You know, you didn't ask to have your house broken into. You didn't ask to get mugged. You didn't ask. You know, nobody asks for a crime to be perpetrated on them. And then they go, oh, wait a minute here. Well, you're talking about a crime here. I mean, you know, we were going out. It looked like she was going to say yes. I said, yeah, but the bottom line is she said no, right? No means no. At least it did when I was growing up. And so, I mean, I have found myself in conversations where I've had to admonish men for that. No one would ever accuse me of being a weakling or being too politically correct, I'll tell you that. And that was the way I raised my son as well. My son is very, very respectful of women. And let's face it, men out there, if you're listening, violence against women, you know what? We own this. This is us doing this. Now, you may not have done it yourself, but I can guarantee that someone in your circle has. Okay? So until we wake up to that reality, until we're willing to admit to ourselves that this is something that we can stop. Like Smokey the Bear says, right? Only you can prevent forest fires. Well, guess what? Men need to be aware of domestic violence, because only men can defeat domestic violence. Without men being part of the equation, as Linda was saying, we're creating this problem. You know, you can't turn a blind eye to this kind of abuse. It's just the reality. I remember walking down the street with my father one day, and a guy was just giving it to his girlfriend right in the middle of a street in downtown Toronto. And my dad walked up, said, excuse me, and knocked the guy out like that. Now, he felt pretty good about that. Unfortunately for the young woman, having been victimized for so long, she started yelling at my father about how she loves him and he didn't mean it and he's going to be sorry. You know, but and I walked away with my father, and my father said, that's pretty messed up, man. And I said, well, you knocked that guy out. He goes, and I would knock any guy out doing that. Because the bottom line is, as he said, she wasn't going to be able to do it. It had to be another guy to do that. You know, it's the old pick on someone your own size mentality. And until men are willing to step into the fray and step between a punch or step between a slap or, God forbid, step in the middle of a gunshot, it's going to continue to happen. And that's, I firmly believe that. That's why I'm very happy to have Linda here, because the reality is the hugest part of this equation is men's unwillingness to accept responsibility. Oh, I would never do that, so it's not something I should have to worry about. Well, if the guy next door is beating up on his wife on a regular basis, and I had a situation like that growing up. My mother went next door one day. We were living in a housing development in Scarborough, and the next door neighbor, you could hear, was beating on his wife. I mean, he was throwing her against the wall. You could hear it. My mother walked out my front door, walked right into their house in the middle of the altercation, and she proceeded to punch that guy out. Just beat the crap out of that guy. And you know what? From the rest of the time that we lived in that area, I can tell you right now, that guy never laid a hand on that woman. Why? Because he knew. Because my mother looked at him straight in the face and said, you know what? If I ever hear this again, not only will you be arrested, but you'll be taken to the hospital. And that's the reality. Now, do you fight violence with violence? I'm not recommending people do that. But what I am saying is that everyone has a smartphone in their pocket. Everyone knows how to dial 911. Everyone's got a camera in their on their phone nowadays. I mean, if you see it, stop it. Videotape it. Take photographs. Call 911. Do everything in your power, not only to stop that action, but from stopping future actions. Because nothing stops a guy in his track faster than shame.
Linda, you were talking earlier about some statistics in regards to reporting and how many cases happen and then how many actually make it to a conviction. Could you go over that again? Because that was really interesting.
Right. So I think the most recent statistics are that out of every 1,000 sexual assaults, 33 are reported. Out of those 33, 29 of them will be recorded by police as crimes. Of those 29, charges will be laid in only 12 cases. Of those 12 cases where charges are laid, only 6 will come to trial, to prosecution. And in the end, of those 6, half or 3 cases will result in convictions.
Now, why are those numbers so low? What is it that makes those numbers so low?
There are a number of factors. One of the biggest ones is evidence. In the courts, you have to have a high standard of evidentiary matters. So where does rape happen? It happens, you know, oftentimes in people's homes. In fact, most often.
Behind
because
closed
it's most
doors.
Often somebody who knows them. And the same with domestic violence. Or you know, sort of in a car or in a dark alley or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there are no witnesses to this, so that you don't have an objective standard of witness. And then when you do have, if this happens to you here in Northumberland, in order for a prosecution to be considered, you would have to have a rape kit done on you, looking for evidence, semen and things like that. And that's a very intrusive procedure, but more importantly, you have to go to Peterborough to have that done. It cannot be done here in the hospital. It takes a specialized nurse with a doctor and a special kit that's got the relevant seals, and evidence is collected, mm-hmm. pictures are taken. So fresh on a rape, a woman is supposed to report this, go all the way to Peterborough, probably in the middle of the night, and have this procedure done with a police officer present, where, you know, all of this evidence, you get poked and probed in every orifice looking for swabbed and whatnot, all for mm-hmm. evidence. And if there is some, that's helpful to the police in prosecution. Mm-hmm. However, then it needs to be such that it's the usual defense is that it was consensual.
He said, she said.
It's a he said, she said. And sure, you've got his semen in you.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you are torn to pieces, it's still he said, she said.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the hard evidence? Where's the witness that it was forced? So in a really, you know, some rapes are so vicious and so traumatic, and the guy does so much physical damage that those are probably the ones that get through the whole process and result in conviction,
mm-hmm.
because there's bruising and tearing and things that make it fairly obvious that it wasn't consensual.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of rapes, especially date rape and acquaintance rape, women don't fight it. because they don't have the physical power to fight it successfully, and they want to make it as easy on themselves as possible, so they just let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that feeds into their sense of self-blame because they feel like they let it happen. They didn't fight it off. Realistically, you know you can't win that fight if you're small and he's a big, muscular guy. How are you going to win that fight? You mm-hmm. know? So just protect yourself and
so even doing the rape kit, though, I mean, you've got to get naked in front of strangers at that point.
Oh, yeah.
You're being poked and prodded by three strangers. A doctor's there, a nurse is there, a police officer is there. Obviously, it's going to be a female officer, at least we
and
hope
not,
it would.
The police aren't doing the poking and prodding.
No, obviously. But the reality is, you know, here you are. You've just been sexually assaulted. I mean, I'm just going to call it rape. You've just been raped. And now you've got to basically expose yourself again within hours or within minutes of it occurring. And go through this voluntary process where, again, you're being raped.
Well, and what's even worse is once you go through that process, what happens at court?
Yes.
Could you maybe talk a bit about that? Because I know that that's for some women is very traumatic when they have to go get on the stand.
Yeah, quite often. I mean, they have to go blow by blow. They get led through testimony about what happened. And they have to go in great detail as to what happened. Now, you've got a judge, you may have a jury, you have spectators in the courtroom. Your name is probably protected as a sexual assault victim, but everybody who's in there knows who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And now with social media, you know very well the police will often say in an accident or something, they can't release the name until the family have been notified. But meanwhile, it's all over social media who this happened to.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things are distressing. And then the perpetrator's lawyer gets to come and cross-examine you. And his job is to discredit that victim's testimony, to make her sound like she's lying. And just he can hammer away at her and hammer away at her until she's so confused she can't remember what her name is.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to, like, that's the goal of a defense attorney, is to mitigate the do the best defense for his client. That's important. A person should always have a defense. But unfortunately, the victim then gets raped in a different kind of way on the stand. Now, there are laws now, there didn't used to be, but now, about not being able to bring in the victim's sexual history.
Mm-hmm.
But if in the course of that cross-examination, she says something that references her sexual history,
then they can bring it
in. Then they can bring it in.
Because
it's
the
back
door
to evidence. Mm-hmm. So that becomes even more horrendous for the woman. She is vilified as a slut, a whore, a liar, a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a same requirement, though, for the man to get on the stand and go through the same process?
No.
No, not at all. He's protected.
And you never have to. You're not obliged to take the stand. I want to remind the listeners, you're listening to Northumberland 89.7. This is your Drive Time. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me is Linda Jansen and, of course, Rob Washburn. This is Consider This. And Linda Jansen, she runs Cornerstone for victims of family violence. November is Women Abuse Awareness Month. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay for some bills, and we're going to come right back with more of this conversation here on your Drive Time. Stick around.
Sometimes we find it hard to ask for help, but at certain times of our lives, it's the responsible thing to do. Jim McGrath is your local source for legal advice. Estate planning, home purchasing, or legal concerns about your business, Jim McGrath provides a hands-on approach that best represents your needs. Jim has been practicing law for 30 years, and he fully understands the law, so you don't have to. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999, because you owe it to yourself and your loved ones to have a responsible professional looking after your legal needs.
I just got married, and I wanted to leave my collection of flannel shirts to my new wife, Lucille, in case of an unfortunate hunting accident. But my cousin Bob was a lousy shot, let me tell you. Jim McGrath made it easy to make a will so that my three previous wives could not touch my stuff. He's been lawyering for 30 years, and let me tell you, he knows what he's doing. Plus, he's a real nice guy. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999 and tell him Cletus sent you.
The three most visited sites on the web are Google, Facebook, and YouTube. For a business to thrive in such times, they have to make use of as many of these channels as possible. Is your business marketing through these platforms? Matthews Media is now offering a selection of social media marketing packages available for any size of business. We set up, customize, and push your content across all relevant online profiles, driving prospective clients toward your business. To find out more about online and social media marketing, visit our website at matthewsmedia.ca or call 905-375-9520.
For over 35 years, Northumberland Security Incorporated has been providing everything necessary for physical and electronic security. From locks, alarms, safes, access control to surveillance systems, and handicapped door operators. We are virtually a one-stop personal and property security center, operating from Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Visit us at 22 King Street West in Cobourg, online at northumberlandsecurity.com, or call 905-372-8951, the professional security team.
You've gone and done it again. You agreed to plan your company's dinner party. Where are you going to hold it this year? Of course! There's nowhere better to hold large events than at the Legion Hall in Cobourg. Hold your receptions and private parties at the Legion Hall, and you can get them catered. Call Shelley at 905-372-6554 and book the Legion for your event today. Become a member and get a special discount. The Royal Canadian Legion Branch 133 is located at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 to become a member today.
Oh yeah, you feel that? Now that's happening. You want to hear some of the funkiest music ever made? Then join me every Wednesday night from 9 to midnight on Uncle Charlie's Cosmic Circus. How was that? Oh, are you still on? Shoot, that's all I've got. Well, check it out.
And welcome back to The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me in the chair today, Rob Washburn, for his regular Wednesday workout here at Consider This. Rob, great to have you back. And Linda Jansen, who is the coordinator chair of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center here in Northumberland. We've been talking about violence against women. We've been talking primarily about sexual assaults. And we opened the show up a little bit there to talk about Gian Gomeshi and his alleged behavior. We have to throw in that. I just got a phone call from our legal representative who said, you can't just say it. You got to say it's alleged. So alleged nefarious behavior. One of the things we talked about during the break was, you know, during this economic downturn, you know, has there been an increase in family violence? Has there been an increase in occurrence given the fact that the economy has gone to hell in a handcart? I mean, money woes are one of the leading causes of family strife, right?
Yeah, we do see an increase in frequency and severity in the population here in Northumberland. And, you know, there's been so many companies close and downsize and job loss and nothing else to do, like no other places to go for work. Quite often people are in their 50s and both parties have worked in the same company and suddenly it's not there. Mm-hmm. It just puts so much stress and strain on a relationship that if there's already power and control issues and abusive tendencies to begin with, that's just going to make it, that just takes off a whole nother layer and people can't cope and they revert to the whole abusive power and control struggles. And then sometimes we see women coming to us from families that have been pretty healthy relationships where there aren't ongoing issues of power and control and there hasn't been a history of abusive behavior mm-hmm. in any of the kind of continuum of abuse from emotional right through. But there have been a couple of incidences of physical aggression in the relationship since, you know, everything sort of went south with the economy and so forth. And those families can be readily helped. There are programs for men who are abusive that will be very helpful in those situations and quickly remediate the issue of violence in the relationship. But more often we're seeing folks who are just at the end of their rope. They have, you know, they have nothing left financially. They don't have jobs. They have no opportunity to get a job to replace what they did mm-hmm. have, to come anywhere near the level they did have. And, you know, sadly, another hallmark of our society is that people tend to live up to the income they have. You know, how often do you get a raise and it all goes in the bank, right?
I mean, well, exactly. So, and that's pretty darn rare, I got to say.
Yeah. So those kinds of stressors just make it so difficult.
Are we coming to a tipping point, if you will, with all these events of the last couple of weeks? I mean, we've seen the abuse month. We've seen the Gomeshi case come forward today. We saw the thing with the Liberals. Are we coming close? Is this a moment of hope, or is what has to happen?
See, I see it as a moment of hope. And when the Gomeshi allegations first came out, there was such a strong reaction against the women who initially made mm-hmm. statements, or the first woman and the first yep. couple of women. And the women's movement that we're part of at Cornerstone and a number of agencies around us are part of, we started having conversations about this, and we hashtagged it, hashtag flip the conversation. Because the conversation started out being all about those bad women who lied.
And if they're telling the truth, why won't they identify themselves? That was the one point that came out. How come these women who have been allegedly abused, well, what have they got to hide then? Why haven't they come out and made it public? And as soon as that happened, I was saying to Rob before you came in, there were a few episodes on Special Victims Unit, a television show, of course, where the only way they could get these guys was to get them in front of a camera where they basically were allowed to shoot themselves in the foot by making such heinous statements that the other women that they had, you know, these problems with, to put it lightly, decided, you know what, he's going to get away with it again. And we're coming out and we're going to speak on it. And that is what we've seen with this particular alleged case against John Gomeshi. More and more women are coming out of the woodwork. And thankfully, you know, this is a conversation. I mean, right now we're talking about allegations. You know, who knows how long it's going to be before we're talking about fact.
So what about this flip the conversation then?
So the conversation is flipping, though. You guys are sitting here talking on the radio about this for like an hour. Men are talking about it everywhere in numbers that have never, ever occurred before. Mm-hmm. And men are saying, like, this is wrong. This is not okay to be blaming the victim. It's not all about the women. They're just being victimized. It's about us guys, just as you guys said. We have to make the changes.
We have to own this.
We have to own it. It's mm-hmm. it's a problem perpetrated primarily by men. That flip of the conversation leads me to be very hopeful. We have at Cornerstone an event every year, and it's a real giggle, called Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got all kinds of men who come out and they traipse around that mile, raise funds for us, which is really important because we always need more funds to serve the victims we serve. However, it engages men, and a lot of men in this community, in this county, have been willing to be engaged, to walk around in red high heels, or we really don't want them to hurt themselves. So many of them do it in red shoes or tie a red bow on their shoes mm-hmm. or just carry the heels or whatever. The point is they're out there showing that they're against violence against women in any form. But that hasn't kind of interpreted into ongoing conversations. So here's an opportunity to get men really engaged in the issue in our county, in our communities here, where men can say, I need to increase my awareness about this. Clearly, I didn't know that it was going on at the level that it is going on. Mm-hmm. Look at hashtag being raped, never reported.
That's what I've just been looking for.
8 million women have posted on that. Yep. Oh, my goodness. That is unbelievable. So I think guys are getting a real wake-up call about the extent of what goes on in terms of assault of mm-hmm. and sexual assault against women. And my hope is that those conversations will keep going, that they will work on their awareness, and they will think about, how do I contribute to this change? How do I be aware? I used to manage a men's treatment program in Brantford for men who had abused their wives, girlfriends, whatever. And it was a model where a man and a woman facilitated the group. And the man who facilitated the group always used to say to me, as a man, I have to watch myself. I have to watch my thoughts and my actions and my behavior and ask myself, am I being abusive? Am I trying to control this situation? You know, because it's so easy to happen. And I think one of the reasons that people don't get involved in domestic violence when they see it going on around them or they hear it next door or on the sidewalk is because a lot of times there's a lot of yelling going back and forth between the parties. And sometimes people think, well, you know, maybe sometime in the past I just blew my stack over something and said something that I regretted. And how do I know that's not what's going on right here, right? So you can't – you're not sure where the line is. And so you don't want to stick your neck out and intervene. And I'm not suggesting that people should. I think that we have police and cell phones and 911. Dave, I think you said that a while back. Or was it you, Rob? I can't remember.
911 on your phone, and you've got the ability to take photographs and video if necessary. So, I mean, if you encounter a situation, you know, as I said, you know, I talked about my father's experience and my mother's experience, both very visceral, both physical responses. But in our modern era where we now have a video camera in our pocket and the ability to call 911 from anywhere on the planet, it's very easy for us to just simply pull out. And you know what? The next thing you know, that victim of violence has the evidence they need in order to go to court. And for me, that is what is really important, is being able to provide that evidentiary documentation going forward.
But I think there's even more. I mean, we were talking earlier about rape kits being available locally. I mean, it's horrific to think that women have to travel all the way to Peterborough to get this procedure done. We should have the proper people here to offer these services. We talked earlier about how the laws need to be changed to make it more fair in the courtroom and more equitable in the eyes of the law. And I think the last thing is we just, you know, our own calibration for what we're going to tolerate in the locker rooms and amongst ourselves when we talk. I mean, I think that's really, and you know, I think, you know, it takes great strength. More strength to do that than it does to be physical and to be violent is to just say, no, I'm sorry, you can't talk like that in front of me. And I think that's really, really important. So I think there's a lot that we can do locally, and I think it's good. And I hope that next year when you do the Red Shoes, you invite Dave here to come down, because I think he'd do a fantastic job. He'd be so good at it.
I wouldn't make the walk. I couldn't do it. I'm telling you, it's physically taxing. But I would definitely donate. And I actually did partake one year a few years ago with Gail Brock and Aaron and I walked from the library. So, again, it's a very much a worthwhile cause.
I'll tell you what, Dave, we'll get you a red wheelchair and I'll wheel you along.
Oh, a wheelchair. Thank you so much, Rob.
Wearing shoes.
I've been speaking with Linda Jansen and Rob Washburn. This has been the Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. I'm going to play. We're going to go 5 minutes over, but I'm going to play the Alan Parsons Project Time, because I think, again, it's time that we started to rethink and, as you said, flip the conversation. And you know what, Robbie, you're talking about being in the locker room and doing and some really hard stuff. And you know what? It's often harder to flip the conversation than it would be to flip the guy standing beside you, which is sad. But it's time for us to do that. And that's what we need to do, Northumberland. I'm Dave Glover. I will be back tomorrow, and looking forward to that. And you have yourself a great evening.